Good afternoon, everybody. Hopefully you can't hear my dog barking his head off downstairs. Yeah, he's always going nuts. But anyways, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whenever, wherever, however you're listening. Hopefully you're doing well. I saw my buddy Jose tweeted something out because, of course, the current war right now is about if you can work at a Panda Express, make 100 grand a year. And he mentioned Bucky's. And funny enough, I put on the Bucky shirt literally just 2 minutes before I read that. But today's show is going to be a lot of fun. It's been 230-ish episodes I had this guest on, and we've done a couple shows together on different podcasts since then, and I always enjoy talking to him. Him and I are both blue collar guys, and enjoy a lot of the same stuff. So today will be a very, very fruitful conversation. I really, really enjoy talking to my guest today about all the things that we're going to talk about, and then some other stuff that I'm sure will come up throughout the conversation. But anyways, before we do all that, go to the description below where you can find myself, everything I got going on, everything my guest has got going on, Tiger Fitness through the link below, tigerfitness.com/KyleM, to let them know that I sent you, get a little bit of a discount, for all your supplements to help you look all jacked and tan, deemed fit through the link below as well, SarahM25, for a little discount as well. That link should auto-populate the code to get some clothes to support first responders. Which is another thing my guest is about today as well. And then Fox & Sons Coffee, use code Kyle at checkout to get some absolutely incredible coffee. I just finished up another bag of the Brazil Honey Prep, which I gave to my dad, and my dad seems to think that he's not feeling the shirt, but that's okay. It's a Bucky shirt, so I can't take it off now. But anyways, without further ado, guys, let's get into it.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And welcoming back to the show, my dear friend, Buck Johnson. How you doing, man?
Good, good. I don't usually wear sleeveless shirts on podcast episodes. I was wearing this, got back from the gym, went to eat, and I thought I better change. And I was like, wait, this is Kyle's show, and now you're wearing sleeves, but I know sometimes you don't. I appreciate that you're wearing a shirt that not only represents my name in some weird form, but it represents my state. And you might appreciate this. Do you know where the first Bucky's is?
Was it in Texas, or I thought it was Florida?
It's in Ron Paul's district.
Oh, no way.
Mm-hmm. I think Dickie's in. If someone in Florida might, you guys can correct me if it is Florida. If it was, okay. But in Texas, for sure, the first one, it's still there. It's like a regular gas station. It's right near Ron Paul's area.
Oh my God, that's absolutely incredible. Dickie, yeah, so much testosterone on one stream. I was trying to, I was watching a bunch of your shows recently. I listened to the one with Stormy, Jim Jotris, the one you put out yesterday. And I think there was one other one that I listened to recently that I couldn't tell you the guest names off the top of my head. But I noticed that you typically wear like a collared shirt. So I'm like, yes. I'm going to try to like outstyle.
Oh, and then here I go. We did the same.
Yeah, mi casa, su casa. But, it is what it is. So anyways, I wanted to get you on today because I listened to you on our mutual friend Tommy's show recently, and you guys were kind of talking about the vibe shift, if you will. And there's going to be many, many things that kind of go all into this topic. But first things first, I guess let's kind of address what you think about the conversation surrounding just the phrase vibe shift.
At some point, it's going to annoy me because things always do once they get out of the bag and overly used. But I mean, I think there is one. It's one of those terms I refrained from using for a while. I think some of this is going to sound surface level and like, especially coming from libertarian world, like you're using sort of generic descriptions, but the election, the ass whipping that it was, I think shows a vibe shift. If you think of what was going on when Trump got elected in 2016, the freakouts at this point, there was really no freakouts because it's like, okay, we lost and we lost big. And the culture at large is against what at the time it seemed like the Trump thing was a surprise in 26, which it was in 2016.
Right.
And the culture at large wasn't ready for it. So that was all the massive pushback. And then, of course, in 2020 with the rioting. But now it's just like they just kind of bowed their heads and walked off. And now a lot of them are, let's say, changing their stripes, if you will. Mark Zuckerberg being probably the most famous one at the moment. You know, he's a rich business CEO of sorts. And he's like, yep, I sense the vibe shift and I'm going that way because I want to make money.
So I'm kind of two minds on this. And I've heard people lay out that argument before. I don't know where exactly to fall on this, but at some point it also does kind of seem to me with kind of what you were saying on the tail end there that, it's almost like MAGA at this point has almost become, I don't want to say meaningless, but it's not exactly clear what the, you know, focus of, you know, the Trump coalition is right now when, you know, you have so many people with vastly different ideas and interests all under one umbrella. So in one hand, I think there definitely is something about kind of the culture and the political winds accepting Trump much more this time around. But I also think that a lot of people feel like they can kind of just accept it because at this point there's so it's such a wide umbrella that there's no real gatekeepers or telling people like, no, you can't be here. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. And to your point about the MAGA thing itself not being as clearly defined as it was in 2016, I would say it's not. I agree with you there. I think, interestingly enough, the coalition, as you're mentioning, getting broader, some of the broadness of it's what's going to be the most controversial things. I think when Tulsi and RFK go through their whatever that's called when they have to get approved here, which what Pete Hegseth did yesterday, and I believe the lady from Florida did today.
Pam Bondi. Yeah.
Confirmation hearings, when that's going to be interesting. For one, they're both Democrats, effectively. You know, she switched parties, and I guess now he has pretty much. But it will be interesting to see the two former Democrats, who on some political scale you might call liberal in the modern sense, I think are going to be getting the most pushback of anyone, probably from actual Democrats, but also from the Republicans. I think it'll be very telling, whoever votes against RFK, I would go ahead and say you can pretty much assure that they have, big pharma, big money coming into their pockets. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of it's going to out people. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I think everybody has kind of wanted to have their hot take about it, and I am 0% above this, but I think a lot of this stuff kind of has to be waited out to kind of see like, okay, well, what's actually going to happen? And it's interesting because I hate this word vibe shift too, but this is what you've heard so many people talk about, and I just felt like that was the most appropriate term to kind of encapsulate what I wanted to talk to you today about.
I hate the term journey, and I use it all the time because I have been on one. It's like, I guess it just works. I don't like it, but whatever.
Yeah, it's a placeholder term to kind of get to a bigger idea, and that's kind of seems like what we're getting at here. So I guess one other thing that really was telling about Trump this time around was about his choice for VP and about a lot of his cabinet. So I joked that it looked like he went to like a strip mall where there was a Dick's Sporting Goods and a Quickie Mart and just hired everybody at both of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, It's kind of what it looks like. But at the same time, these are also all younger and very competent people. It seems kind of like the boomerism is going out, or at least there's kind of like an at least there's an attempt to kind of pass the torch.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think absolutely. I think the main thing that I was watching for was who he picked for VP. I will say I predicted, and I was wrong. I might have been on your show that Tucker would have some office.
Yeah.
I started to think, well, he's going to pick Tucker for VP. He wasn't far off. I mean, Tucker's way more on the record with his opinions on hard issues, because he can now, but than JD Vance is. But it's a similar demographic. I guess Tucker's probably a few years older than me. JD's probably a few years older than you, which is interesting. And he's from up and around that area, I believe, at some point. So he's kind of like Amy and Julie, the twins up there in Pennsylvania, were very excited that they have an Appalachian millennial right winger representing the vice president, the office of vice president. That's who I was watching for, because last time it's like Pence, boring. I mean, really not worse than boring, awful, like Pompeo type thing. And then this one, I was like, interesting. This looks way different than anything in my lifetime, especially as far as VP picks go. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the best one of my lifetime that I can think of. Certainly better than Dan Quayle. I mean, all the way down the George Bush Sr. was the first one I can remember. It was rough. Think of the Libertarian Party ones that I voted for. The guy under Gary Johnson the first time, the second time. The vice presidential spot has been terrible. And so now it's like, wow, an actual guy with some ideas. And I like him because he's not, I mean, I guess ideologically you'd say right wing he is, but he has some left sensibilities that I'm not totally against in theory. And so we'll see. I think he's going to play good cop to Trump's bad cop as far as the face goes. But I think behind the scenes, it's opposite.
You know, what's funny is when you initially said that, I was going to disagree. But though, when you said behind the scenes, it's going to be different, I think I completely agree with that, because it seems like Trump now at this point is kind of a worn out, tired, low energy. Like, his campaign towards the end was spot on. But, you know, for the most part, his speeches were kind of meandering, you know, rambling on, and just kind of a different Trump. That's just not the Trump that he used to be.
Yeah.
And my hypothesis there is much like yours, where JD is going to be a little bit more the guy who turns the screws and directs the ship, if you will, because Trump's kind of there for the popularity. And, you know, maybe it is kind of like a, hey, we're passing the torch on to the next generation. Absolutely. And I mean, I think you kind of saw this in the presidential debates as well, where like Ron DeSantis is what, like 45 or somewhere around there. He's not that much older than JD Vance. It kind of seemed like the Republican Party now, the up and comers at least, are a little bit more like millennial, or like, you know, Gen X. Yeah.
Yeah. Vivek Ramaswamy. I think Tucker, outside of Trump, Tucker's by far the most popular voice on the right, and he's Gen X like myself. So it's nice. I remember during the COVID thing, there's this fat guy in New York, and I forgot his name, Jerry Nadler or something like that. And he's short. You know, my judgment was on. I admit that my physique judgmentalism was on. He's short, fat. He like dresses in sloppy suits, and he's ugly. But he had a lot of power in Congress. And I remember, and he's old. And I was like, this old, disgusting little man should have zero say on whatever happens in my life. It's ridiculous. And so you start to see, you know, getting away from just judging someone's physique, but like Biden and these boomers. And it's like, why again do they have power for so long? Mm-hmm. So I think we are seeing a shift in that. I guess they attempted to with Kamala. Her whole thing was like, it's, what were they saying at first? It's time to not pass the torch or reach out to the youth or whatever Biden was trying to say about her. Mm-hmm. Didn't work because they found the dumbest one they could find. And so that was part of the issue there.
Yeah. And Kamala's campaign was so funny because I didn't think Biden was going to drop out. Like, it wasn't a surprise, but it's like, well, they're in a pretty bad place because you can't run Gavin Newsom because you can't have a president and vice president that are both from the same state. Kamala is just historically unpopular. She was unpopular as a presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. And you could try to run Josh Shapiro, but he still doesn't have any name recognition. Like, there was no clear heir to the throne on the Democrat side. You know, there was a pretty, I don't want to say cynical part of me, but like a hopeful part of me, if you will, that RFK would have been kind of the selection for the Democrats. I think that would have been their chance of relevancy.
Yes.
But obviously they chose not to do that. And I think that was much to their great detriment. And I think the Democratic elite's really going to have to reimagine themselves for 2028 if they want to stand any chance against J.D. Vance or Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, I think I could see if this quote unquote vibe shift continues, I could see J.D. Vance in 2028 versus RFK. Because you're if the vibe shift does keep moving that way, you cannot have a modern neoliberal Democrat, and like that's done. And so it's going to have to be, let's say, a MAGA Democrat versus a MAGA Republican. We shall see. Just some things that have been floating around in this brain of mine.
Right. So one thing that kind of sprung up recently too, and I think kind of shows a little bit of a fissure over in the MAGA world, was the whole debate over H-1B visas. And then, as I kind of talked about in the introduction, about the whole you can make $100,000 a year working at Panda Express. And I think this kind of goes to the heart of what it means to be like a working class American. What do you think about that discourse that's been going on recently between the H-1B visas and then kind of like, I think what people are looking for is like the value of your work.
That H-1B thing, it was interesting because like I still have like the ANCAP, certain strains of it floating around inside me. And so you can see on paper, I knew where Vivek was coming from.
I think
his example of using the Saved by the Bell thing was off, but if you look at pure economics, I understood where he was coming from. I don't think we're in an appropriate time in this culture and in American society to be discussing how foreign people can be smarter than Americans, so they should displace American workers. I think this is a real bad time to just have that discussion openly because of the economy, particularly in the areas up, you know, the Rust Belt and whatnot. These guys, and I bet you would understand this, the guys at your shop don't want to hear about how much smarter an Indian is than they, or they could make more money. And Vivek's thing about the Saved by the Bell thing, the tweet that he made, he's a nerd. And so skinny little nerds have always held resentment against people that are more popular, better looking, stronger than they are. It just is what it is. And it doesn't mean that the bigger, stronger, better looking people are dumb. It's just that that's all he had to offer. Most of his life was his intellect, and his parents were very strict. I get that. And I will say the Asian culture in general, which is in India is part of, is stricter, sure, than the American culture. But I think some of that was his inner resentment towards people he viewed as more popular and bigger and better looking than he is. Now that he's got this platform to speak, he's kind of going to give them the middle finger, like, well, we're, you know, that kind of whole snarky attitude. So there was some of that in there, his passion against people bigger and better than him. But I understood a little bit of where he's coming from economically. I just think I'm for eliminating any sort of tax incentives to hire people from other countries.
Yeah, you know, I definitely agree with that. And one thing that I think people missed, and I'm curious what you think about this, is that everybody complained about the participation trophy generation and like, you know, just that kind of like, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of lazy millennials and stuff like this. I think that was part of his criticism, too, that seemed to go unnoticed. And like you said, I think some of his criticism was warranted. But I had my buddy Nuke on with my buddy Jack, and we talked about this a little bit. And the more appropriate thing to do would have been deport a bunch of people, right? Because that's kind of what, you know, the whole supporting Trump was about, is to, you know, for mass deportations. You deport, you know, however million people, and then you say, hey, we want to make the economy better by bringing in foreign labor. I disagree with it, but at least you kind of build up some capital, rather than before Trump's even in office, throwing this out here and basically calling everybody lazy retards, which I think a lot of people were being hyperbolic. I don't think he really did that. I think it was just more like, hey, I think that we can get highly skilled immigration, but really the argument should be, well, why don't we train Americans to do that? And
correct.
My dad said real quick, picture an Indian standing under a snow-covered car for a tire rotation for 1/10. Yeah.
Bingo. Yeah.
Sorry.
All said, Dad. And part of me, maybe it was just my American bravado or something. I'm like, if you guys are so freaking smart, why don't you go back there? How's your culture doing in India?
Yeah.
Not so great. It's disgusting. So like, somewhere there we're missing something of why, if you're such a strict, smart culture, why is India disgusting?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't see Americans trying to go there.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of been the general retort to it, is that like, okay, well, why do 100,000 people die in India a year from deaths
malaria
from
or something? Yeah.
Diuretic diseases, as in you literally shit yourself to death. Yeah. Why does that not happen here in America? But you know, we have all these allegedly talented Indian engineers and software developers and all this that are over there. Can't they do that same thing over there? Or is there something you're not telling us?
Correct. Yeah. It's like, great culture, huh? You're here. I see.
Yeah. So, the other thing was this whole discussion around, like, I seen some people. On one side, there was somebody saying $100,000 is like middle, or somebody literally said $100,000 isn't even middle class. You can't even buy a house with that. I'm like, okay, well, that's ridiculous. And then on the other side, people are like, oh, well, you should be able to make $17,000 a year and then support a family. And it's like, okay, well, there's like a happy medium here. And I'm standing in between two retards looking like, okay, if you make 100 grand a year and you can't afford a house, that says more about you than it does about the salary. Now, anybody that's saying you can make you can make minimum wage and then raise a family on that is also retarded. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been the discourse today. Your thoughts?
There's some nuance there. So the $100,000 thing certainly depends on where you live.
Right.
Where the twins, Julie and Amy, live up in rural, small town Pennsylvania. Absolutely. If you make $100,000,
you're living good.
You're living quite well. If you make $100,000 in Austin, you're middle class at the highest.
Right.
You're at the very top of the ladder. You're middle class. Now, if you make whatever the $17,000 a year, sure, you can raise a family because you're going to be under the poverty line and you're going to get a bunch of money per kid, which is unfortunately what they keep doing. Right. So you're not going to raise them well, but I don't know how much a kid is for each kid's a welfare payment. So on some bare bones minimum, sure, I guess it's possible. But yeah, I'm like you, there's a happy middle ground. A lot of this has to do with, geez, you're making me go back to the libertarian stuff, but a lot of this, it has to do with the Federal Reserve. We all understand that
right.
The inflation and whatnot, this, and yeah, I think largely it just depends on where you live. That conversation, and certainly in a lot of areas, $100,000 is pretty good. There's a lot of areas around Austin that it's not so good. You definitely could not buy a house.
Yeah. And like, I think that's a pretty recognizable point. Like if you were in New York City, I remember when my wife and I went up there to go meet Kelly Clarkson. And it was, I looked at a sign and it said to rent out a garage space, just a space for your car, was like $600 or $700 a month. Yeah. So yeah, if you're making 100 grand in New York City, you're probably just scraping by. But when somebody says that, like, okay, well, the median income in the United States is like $69,000, which, you know, you go back 5 years ago, I think the median income was like $48,000. So what's your point? I mean, look at like the value of your dollar has just tanked. I told people about this, but like I make significantly more money than I did at the same job you know, from when I first got hired in May of 2021 till now. I'll tell you what, I'm definitely no further ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I know. That's what sucks is they keep pumping out these dollars, which makes every single dollar we own worth much less. And they just keep doing it without asking us. You know, I think if they explain what's going on, most people would go, please stop. Mm-hmm. Just stop. You know, and we can blame Trump and everyone else before him for much of this inflation. Certainly since 2008, it just kept going. It got laid in Biden's lap. And I think that's largely what lost them. It would have certainly lost him the election. There, of course, there's a lot of contributing factors, his mental decline, and then her lack of intelligence, it really sunk them. But I think the inflation thing had a lot to do with it as well. And people just think whoever's in office, it's their fault for the exact moment I'm feeling right now.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's incorrect, but there definitely are things that you could, I mean, and I know you wouldn't disagree with this, but you know, like a lot of stuff does deserve to fall right around Biden's neck because he's been in there for so long and he's advocated for all the worst policies. Yeah. So a lot of blame deserves to go on him, but like in the inflation stuff, I think a lot of people, it amazes me that people never connected like, oh, we just printed an unprecedented trillions of dollars in 2020. And then, you know, all of a sudden the prices for everything went up. Like these two things are not disconnected whatsoever. But once again, then Biden gets in and then I think he actually printed more money in his 4 years than Trump did in his 4 years. But, you know, I think that's just kind of the way that things goes that we're kind of on that path where I hate to say it, but things are going to continue to get worse without some kind of significant change. I'm doubtful that Trump's going to be that significant change, but I mean, you know, we literally have a ceasefire deal in Gaza. Now, granted, it's a temporary ceasefire. Israel's still killing Palestinians as of like the last couple hours. And then even like, I think the ceasefire is supposed to go into effect on Sunday. They've been known to break the ceasefires, but
yeah,
that's more than we got out of Biden. Biden put no conditions on anything and there was no diplomacy. That was kind of the Biden thing, is no diplomacy with anyone, anywhere, anytime, or any reason. It was just, you know, whatever, we'll let it fall apart.
Never even spoke with Putin on the phone, not one time. Isn't that insane? Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, I tweeted about this right before we were on, the new left, you know, left wing talking points drop and it's just like across the board, all these NPCs just repeat them. And when you're demographic or NPCs, it's very easy to have message discipline because they all just go, okay, I'll say it. The new one is that Biden, the ceasefire is because of Joe Biden. I must have seen that 30 times today by blue check NPC people. Mm-hmm. It's just hilarious. And they're really going for it. So obviously that wasn't him that did that. But I guess they think, yeah, he did something great in the last 5 days of his presidency. Mm-hmm. But if Trump did do that, I mean, I think he did. It's impressive. And, you know, you said they've been known to break ceasefires. I think Trump's kind of demeanor of peace through, what do you say, courage or force?
He always says peace through strength.
Through strength.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a fan of Netanyahu, apparently. I think he disinvited him to the inauguration.
Well, Netanyahu also had like a, what the hell was it? His prostate cancer. He had a prostate treatment recently. So you don't want to travel during recovery. Yeah, I tweeted out
that. Did he get over it?
Unfortunately, I tweeted out the real MVP last year was Benjamin Netanyahu's prostate cancer. So
yeah. Never want to wish death upon someone. Wow. But.
But yeah,
that was a butt joke. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. Ever see what happens when they, as in Indians, buy a gas station? 1 year after they buy it, it's a shithole. At least most American business owners have pride in their business. And yes. I think this is actually a really good point. And I had a little bit of trouble grappling with this, but you know, I worked for my dad for years, probably like a year total. And then I've worked in the automotive industry for 13 years now total. And all the guys I've worked around have been your average standard white guy. I've worked with a few black guys, maybe I think one female tech. And the general consensus is, hey, we want to leave the customer with their vehicle better than when they brought it to us, essentially, right? Because that's what they do. You know, you're a firefighter, you want to make sure that the family feels safer than they did before you arrived. I've heard that in India, that's not so much a thing. Like, not that they don't want to do their job, but like the way that we look at our work is like something honorable isn't quite present there. And I think that's kind of what a lot of the debate around the whole immigration situation has been, is that like, hey, there is something to, you know, our mutual friend Pete Red Hawk and all those guys, the Old Glory Club, about the glory of being an American and about what it means to be an American. I think that's what a lot of people kind of had in mind when they were voting for Trump and when they were talking about immigration.
Yeah, and certainly it's this weird thing. I feel like certain aspects of MAGA, like to your point about it being such a wide coalition, it's like you realize this is America first. Like that's what this movement is about. So to come in as the Indian guy and go, well, we got to import in, it's like, no. We're not importing anyone.
Right.
We're not giving foreign aid. Now, I don't know if this is going to happen. This is what should happen. We're not giving foreign aid to anyone.
Right.
This America has to be fixed, and it's broken across the board. Like my friend Jason says from the 2-Bit, or from formerly of 2-Bit podcast, Jason Mirinchuk, now, we don't have a civilization anymore. You're really seeing that in California right now. That's very obvious down there. When you don't have water in your fire hydrants and the town burns, you don't have a civilization. So until we rebuild all of these things, we're not importing anyone. I don't care how smart the Indian person is or how smart the Japanese person is or whatever. We're not giving money to Israel. We're not giving money to Ukraine. That needs to all stop. That's what America first means. So anyone who has any opinions within the administration that's not that needs to be out.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty simple request. And I'm curious your thoughts on this as well. But I recently kind of changed my mind on immigration over like the last year per se, right? I used to be of the mind like, oh, I'm not like an immigration restrictionist at all, like highly skilled, basically the same position as Vivek. Like, I think it's reasonable to say like we should have people come here who are going to make America better. But over time, I kind of thought about it a little bit more. I'm like, you know, when the average family can't afford to have kids, like there are people my age that are saying, I don't want to have kids because I just can't afford it. And then, you know, older people who can't afford to take care of their grandkids, or people who are making, once again, 100 grand a year or something like that, and feel like they're struggling. I don't think we should be throwing any more variables into this situation until the average middle class person feels like they could have a family and prosper. Yes. Not just have a family, but prosper, but save money, invest, feel like their kid has a home, right?
Yes.
Not just an economic zone.
Right. And that's one of the faults I look back upon my ANCAP thinking was you're looking at people as units. I did, not to say all libertarians, because we're like herding cats. So everyone thinks differently in some aspects. But I was looking at people like economic units. I think Ayn Rand is big on this. And it's like, and Murray Rothbard did to an extent, although he got some culture in there at some point too. But we're not just economic units. That's pure liberalism at its core. And we're all individuals and we're all equal in some manner. It's like, no, none of these things are true. You're not equal. You're not all individuals because we're all in groups of some sort. Kyle's a husband. He's about to be a dad. He's a son. He's not just Kyle by himself. And so that out.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Look, this weird Protestant work ethic thing of like, well, everyone's got to be a... What's the cheapest way to do this? Well, that gets you shitty houses that fall apart when they burn. What's the cheapest way? Like, at some point, culture matters, and we'll figure things out once the culture's built back and healthy again and people are working and can afford things. Then we can talk about importing the smartest of the smart people. But we're closed for business right now. It's kind of like we're remodeling. No one's going to move in this house at the moment because we've got a close for remodeling sign. That's going to take a long time. Once we're all fixed up and remodeled again, we can discuss if we want renters or not. And if we do, it needs to go back to a sponsorship program to where a family that's already here and that has roots here sponsors an immigrant and is responsible for their clothing, their medical care, their schooling, and so on.
Right. I agree. And like you said, I think J.D. Vance, when he said at one of the debates or at a press conference, I can't remember what exactly it was, but he said that America is a nation, not an economic zone.
That's the biggest thing of the entire campaign, in my opinion, that
exactly.
He said that. That's the anti-neocon way. Neocons look at America as an idea, which is why we can spread it across the globe. And everyone who hated that statement, I guarantee you, just like the people that vote no against RFK, those people are in the pockets of something, a bad industry, which is the military industrial complex. For JD to say that, it was refreshing. It's like, okay, it's not an idea. It's an actual nation of people and citizens, not an idea. Sorry to interrupt you, but that was one of my favorite parts of the entire campaign.
No. I wanted you to comment on that. And that's because I think it was an important distinction where we hadn't quite heard anybody lay that idea out before, right? Or like you haven't heard somebody who was potentially going to be in the White House.
Lately. Pat Buchanan said it, but yeah, he didn't.
Well, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So it was refreshing to hear that because it's like, no. Like at least he seems like Trump obviously loves America. I don't think he has any idea in respect of like what exactly would be needed to kind of bring this country back on course. It seems like J.D. Vance actually kind of has a little bit more of the ideas. Trump's more of the face, kind of like what we were saying earlier, yes. Where Trump, in public may seem like bad cop and, J.D. Vance, just nobody really knows about him. But then behind the scenes, it's like J.D. Vance, hey, this isn't an economic zone anymore, right?
Right.
We want this to be a nation. This is a country. This is somewhere where we want, the future generations to feel like, no, we want to stay here because, people are moving all over the country and sometimes out of the country because, hey, I can't afford to live in California anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, that's a sign that you don't have a civilization anymore. People don't want to live in New York anymore. I mean, I went to New York City, like I said, like 2 years ago, and there's homeless all over the place. It smells awful. There's construction everywhere. It's not beautiful at all. And like you and I were talking about, the twins over here a little bit earlier. There's parts of Pennsylvania that still look good, but though, there's still some dull infrastructure over here and there. We want this country to feel like something like it used to be, right? Like we want to go not like back to the 90s, but where America felt like America, not just like you said, like an economic zone.
Right. Yeah. And that my entire voting life, including me being a libertarian and into that part of politics, it was always an economic zone. And well, if we import cheaper labor, then our products will be cheaper. And so that's actually better for the poor people and blah, blah, blah. Everything was looked at like we're just little widgets moving around. They're like there's no actual civilization or familial ties or culture or common ancestry or common language even. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's hope at least pointed in that direction. I think a lot of us are jaded as to where things have been my entire voting life for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. I was just talking to my girlfriend last night. We were sitting at dinner and I was talking about Tulsi and RFK. If they get confirmed, which I think they will, it'll be tough. If they do what they say they're going to do, those two industries, the intelligence industry and of course the FDA and all of things that represents will be flipped from the way that I've grown up knowing them. Mm-hmm. And she goes, that's almost too good to be true. It might be. I don't know. It might be. I've never seen it change since I was a kid. So if RFK can't change that and Tulsi is being honest and can't change it, I mean, I don't know what we're going to do then. Be accelerationist or something.
Yeah. As Red Hawk always says, accelerationism doesn't work because there's still leftists in South Africa.
Yeah. <That's fair. laughs>
That's I used to say the same thing, and then I'm like, oh yeah, he's definitely got a point there.
Yes.
So one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I promise I'm going somewhere with this, but you see a lot of these OnlyFans girls kind of coming out as being born again, right? Yeah. What do you think that kind of phenomena from a 50,000 foot view kind of says about where the culture's going?
That's that vibe shift I was talking about. My friend Jason, again, to throw his name out there, from Marin, Jason from Marin Chuck Now, he had this quote that's been gone all over the place for the last year, saying that, basically predicting this. I think it's called Jason's Apple Pie Prediction. And he said, you're going to see these blue haired kind of Bill Maher listening types all of a sudden in sundresses, baking cookies, going to church, et cetera. Here we are. I guess he was right. And so, you know, I'm conflicted over things like that. I'm conflicted when I see people like Russell Brand. I have to be very careful as an Orthodox Christian, especially one with a presence online, not to cast judgment on, I don't know what's in their heart and mind and why they're doing this. I hope it's for a good reason. And I hope it's for, I hope it's for a true reason. Let's put it that way. Because if it is, and you're an OnlyFans girl, and then you come to Christ legitimately and truthfully, then you will be repenting and be forgiven. So I would applaud that. I hope that it's not just another costume that they're putting on, much like they did on OnlyFans.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of something I've thought about a bit, because I know you've texted me a few times when, specifically the one time I had a viral tweet about Russell Brand calling me, he used to proclaim that he was a communist, and then he became, I called him like a doormat for neocons and a evangelical grifter or something like that. I look at his conversion and then like that Nala fit, and like you said, is this a mask or is this true? When I see somebody that all of a sudden, when they were in a lot of hot water, and like the pressure seemed to go away, and then they come out as like this super Jesus freak, and not that I have a problem with religious people, I truly don't. It seems awfully performative when your entire personality goes to that, just all of a sudden out of nowhere. And then also like the defense of Andrew Tate. But before we kind of go there, I'm curious, like go ahead and give your thoughts there before I, yeah.
I mean, I don't have any pertinent thoughts on Andrew Tate. I just shouldn't say anything.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm
not a fan. Let's put it that way.
Of course. And me neither. I think the thing that, resonates with Andrew Tate when it comes to other people, I think it's because there's been such a lack of positive male identity in the culture writ large.
Oh, absolutely. I understand 100% why a young man would be attracted and drawn to what Tate represents, without a doubt. You know, there's elements of the red pill manosphere that I absolutely agree with and I understand. I think there's toxic elements in it too. So in the orthodoxy, we call it the royal path, where you don't want to, let's say in this instance, you don't want to be some soy boy beta male cuck. The same energy though, just kind of blowing your own ego up, is what Andrew Tate has. Like, I don't want to be either one of those angles. I'd rather be something not in either direction, if that makes sense. So, but I get it. It's, you know, when men are shit on, and which they are largely, and we're in a matriarchy, or we're about to get out of that, but we have been in one for a long time. Sure, a lot of young men feel judged and shit upon. And so they see a guy like Tate, who's a bit of a narcissist and misogynist, and they're like, I don't blame them for looking up to that. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the world kind of is starved for people like that. But I think on the flip side of this, and not to kind of group you in with anybody that you wouldn't want to be grouped in with, but I think, you know, kind of your journey, if you will, over the last few years, for you is probably emblematic of kind of like the change in culture writ large as well, where you see a lot of people kind of going back to the church and looking for more of a positive identity, not just a positive male identity, but a positive identity overall. And I it seems like orthodoxy has really been that for you. And I think we've talked about this a little bit, but would you agree with that? And if so, you know, elaborate, if you will.
Would I agree that it's a positive, like it's a move in a positive direction for me and that other people are doing that?
Yeah, both.
Yes. I mean, yes, for me. Yeah, big time for me. And I think there's a few different layers to this. We're going to see, to your point, with the OnlyFans girls wanting to find God, there's going to be a shift, and we're undergoing it right now, where these, let's say, blue-haired lefties, like I mentioned earlier, are going to realize, because they're not actual leftists, if you will, like dyed in the wool, like they're going to have been out in the 60s, you know, and protesting in San Francisco, not to that extent. I don't think there's an actual, they're sitting home reading Marx books and whatever you want to, you know, Hegelian dialectic stuff, but it's trendy. It was, that's the air, that's the water we swam in, was that was the prevailing narrative, the prevailing culture. Most people don't think very deep and they just go, oh yeah, the people on the TV said, these people are racist and racism's bad and Christians are bigots and BLM's good, so I'm over here. Wear a mask is good, so I do that. There's not a lot of depth to any of that. So once that all, when you do have this vibe shift and it moves rightward, I just went left. When it moves rightward, yeah, those people naturally are going to go, well, now I'm this. So there's not a lot of thought to it. There's a danger in that. I'd rather know what the enemy looks like, very apparently blue hair and a nose ring, than long blonde hair and a summer sundress. Yet they're still not totally, they're still going to look at me as an Orthodox Christian and say I'm some sort of fringe Russian extremist or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we're in an interesting, again, shift here in culture, to where this mush Christianity is going to be on the rise. And I fear that they are going to direct their ire towards, let's say, the actual church, and say that we're too ancient or old-fashioned or a patriarchy or whatever, and we're still going to be getting slings and arrows thrown our way. I mean, that I'm not like scared of that, but I suspect that's coming.
Yeah, I think it sounds kind of like your fear was kind of like my fear of metal being canceled because of the return of religion. And I remember talking to, I think it was Rachel Wilson, who who said, oh yeah, don't worry about that. That's not going to come from our camp. She's like, maybe some other people, but not us.
Yes. Yeah. So, the last time I hung out with three Orthodox priests at one time, they were, you would appreciate this. One of them was powerlifting. And Black Sabbath was playing like at volume 11. And they were explaining to me why the lyrics of Black Sabbath are so good and pertinent. So it's not exactly the boomer mega church, the crowd that's like, if you play it backwards, it says Satan stuff, you know.
I do think that maybe some of those things might come back into fashion, as in like dispensationalism, Protestantism, and kind of like those. And one thing that's kind of interested me about Orthodoxy, and I still consider myself agnostic, is that it seems like you guys have the most concrete, you guys, but the Orthodox religion kind of seems, Orthodox Christianity seems to be based on like the most truth, is in like historically the most correct, and like has the strongest grounding, if you will.
I would absolutely agree with that, which is why it's why once I found it, I was like, oh, well then if I'm looking for Christ and Christianity, excuse me, and quote unquote religion, Well, I want the original one. I'm not going to go like the one that, you know, caught wind in the 1500s and then switched around in the 1800s and then switched around again in the 1920s. It's like, why don't I skip all of these changes and go back to that thing? Because unfortunately, a lot of these changes, when you remain unchanged for the most part, you tend to not fall for the propaganda of the moment. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the propaganda of the moment, if you do fall for it, it can build up and build up and build up. And that's why we have dispensationalism. That's why we have AIPAC. That's why we have support, you know, Republican Party people, except for like Thomas Massey and probably Rand Paul and a few others, Mike Lee, maybe. Like, they're all support Israel no matter what. And it's like, that's real. That's based on, now a lot of these politicians aren't basing it on theology because they're just taking money, right? And their constituents want that, but their constituents are basing it on poor theology that started in about 1870 and has worked its way up into, of course, Israel being formed or whatever in 1948, and it got worse and worse after that. I can go on and on. I mean, this is a passionate topic of mine. Mm-hmm. The certain study Bible came out, and all of these things were based on propaganda. And the Orthodox Church looked at it and said, nope, that's not real. You guys are lying. This is not the truth. This is not the original church teachings. And so I found this, and I'm like, well, yeah, why would I not want this? We're leaving, not me specifically, I was an atheist, but a lot of these people coming to the Orthodox Church are leaving, let's say, not trad cath stuff like mm-hmm. Pete is, but like modern Catholicism and modern Protestant churches. Like, they're leaving that stuff to find the truth. Mm-hmm. So it behooves us to stick with the truth, because that's what people want, and that's what at least some people want.
Right. I do get concerned over the sincerity, and I think it seems like you share the same thing, is that, like, with these conversions, it almost seems like a branding exercise for some people now. And, you know, for me, being an agnostic person and having a lot of close friends who are religious, I take offense to that, because it's like, well, this is somebody's sincerely held beliefs that, like, are very, very meaningful to them and kind of shape the way they look at the world. So when you use it as like your branding tool, I don't like it, man. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. Luckily, I think there's less of that, I hope, at least from my perspective in the Orthodox Church, because when you come here, you have a spiritual father, your priest usually, and like, you have to undergo some not fun changes. And so once they put the mirror in front of your face and they go, here, this person that you see, that's the problem. It's not the gaze or the deep state. Like, that's all separate. First, look at this guy in the mirror, and he's the problem or she's the problem. Once you start working on that for a little while, we can start to talk about other. And so a lot of people that are kind of grifters are going to go, okay, cool, I'm out. Let's see, what about that mega church? I can do whatever I want over there and still like look wholesome. So it's easier to grift. If Russell Brand were to be a grifter, it's easier for someone like him to find a different sect of Christianity that's not going to hold him super accountable. They'll allow him to stand in his tidy whities in a body of water and all of a sudden have the power to baptize someone. It's like, where'd you get that from? Don't know. That would absolutely not happen in the Orthodox Church.
Right. And I recall when you were on a Brandy and I show a couple months back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about this a little bit, but you were like, okay, well, Orthodox Christianity is great when it's anti everything else, but what happens when it's anti you?
Yes. And that's what we all have to think about and walk through. And so, you know, it's the whole iron sharpens iron. It's funny. I always use the secular analogy to lifting weights. So you would get this, like, you don't just walk in the gym and go, all right, I'm a strong dude. Like, you don't just walk into church and go, I'm a Christian and I'm good now. It's like, you keep working, and it's not fun all of the time. In the end, it can be fun at the end of the day or whatever, but it's like, it's not easy. It sucks. And sometimes you're super sore. Sometimes you drop a weight. Sometimes you miss a PR, and you just keep pushing through all of that. It's like burning, in that way, it's burning the weakness, you know, like pain, the whole thing, pain is weakness, leaving your body. It's burning the weakness away and becoming Orthodox. The attempt is to burn the bullshit away that is you and is the old you, at least. And so that's, you know, it's spiritually painful, just like a good workout is physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bull Rush said skin suit Christianity. And I think that's what a lot, I shouldn't say a lot, but I do think there's definitely an aspect to that. And it's kind of incentivized, like that whole Nala Fit situation where she decided after doing OnlyFans for years that she was going to come out and announce herself as a Christian. And then Michael Knowles interviews her. And it's kind of like, are you sure you kind of want to put that to the world? And like, I'm not telling anybody that like, you can't do this. You shouldn't do that. This should be against the law. It's just like, well, think about it from your own perspective. Do you want people to convert? Yes, obviously. But shouldn't you also encourage people to do the work and, you know, go through the spiritual practices before you give them the reward of publicity and then becoming known as like this, you know, fully religious figure now without, you know, really spending a lot of time doing, you know, the stuff like you said, where it's not like you could go into the gym tomorrow and deadlift 500 pounds. I mean, right. I've really experienced this over the last couple of weeks. Yeah. I hit 515 on the deadlift for one rep. My max is 535, but I haven't traditionally deadlifted for a while. But then, you know, this past week I struggled to do 500. So it's like, okay, well, some weeks you take a step back.
Correct.
Some weeks you're taking steps forward.
Yep. That is exactly. That's a perfect analogy. It's spiritually, it's the same thing. It's why we have confession. That's why you have a spiritual father. It's like, you think you're on this great path and, oh, I'm doing well. And then it's like, I don't know. I got shit faced without even realizing. And then I threw my whole week off, and then I forgot my prayer rule. And it's like, it's okay. Admit it, confess it, get back up and keep moving. And again, even like with my own show, I try to get other people to come on and teach, if you will, or give interesting perspectives. I never come on and go, all right, you guys, if you're listening to my show, I need you to start praying and put down those cigarettes. I'm just not a salesman of that sort. And so I'm always a little bit, I have kind of the people's eyebrow raised when I see someone acting like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it comes from you understanding that like, you are flawed, we're all flawed, and you understand that like, there is work on your own hands to do. And this isn't me criticizing you. I hope you don't take it that way, but
you're,
it's like,
totally right.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, this is me on my journey. I'm learning from this person. Like right now, I'm learning from you about your journey. I want to share this conversation with people so that way they kind of understand. And then, you know, maybe if they're interested, they go over to your channel and then check some of that stuff out and decide, you know, hey, maybe I'll start praying every once in a while, or maybe this changed my mind. This opened my mind a little bit more. Like my conversations with, you know, you, Tommy, Jim Bob, Jay Dyer, Rachel have all kind of changed my mind and my perspective on the way that I look at religion. And I thank you guys for it, but it's kind of like, there's a lot there. And every time I talk to somebody about it, I'm like, I'm just far too ignorant to start commenting or claim that I know anything. And I'm guessing for you is probably the same way when you first started your journey.
Jeez. Yeah. I mean, I still feel like that sometimes. And I think part of the issue probably with you, and it was definitely this way and still is to an extent with me, like in our culture, orthodoxy is not the prevailing dominant, version of Christianity. So you do see people like Russell Brand and that girl or whatever. And I grew up seeing people, it's like George Bush saying that he was a Christian, yet he goes and does what he did. And Joe Biden saying he's a Catholic and he did what he did. So you grow up and you're like in these TV evangelists, and it's like, that seems like bullshit. If it's true, it's not very powerful. But that was a different version, if you will. When I first had my eyes open to Orthodoxy, and I read this little pamphlet by Father Seraphim Rose, my whole mind was blown. I was like, oh, wait a second. I've been speaking out against Christianity, but not this. This is, there it is. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, wait a second. Okay. This is not what I grew up hearing. It's not promising that Israel's the new promised land. And wait, so the Israel of 1948 till now is not the Israel of the Bible. Wait a second. What is all of this? And so my whole mind, you have to unlearn a bunch of things that have been propagandized. Even if you didn't necessarily jump on it and go, yeah, that's me. You're still swimming in this Protestant kind of mega church waters of America that's in a way watered down Christianity. And so it's it's very understandably turns people off. And there's one of my favorite bands called Agnostic Front, an all New York hardcore band. And I asked my spiritual father, who also likes them and loves punk rock, I said, should I not wear this shirt? I feel weird because it says agnostic. And he looked at it and he's like, no, because they're against the same type of Christianity that you and I are. They just don't know Orthodoxy yet. So it's not a big deal.
Mm. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably where a lot of people are who are anti-religion. They kind of see, like Bull said, the skin suit Christianity, where it's you're selling God on, you know, through your Bible or through, you know, tax exemptable yeah. donations and all this stuff. It's just stuff like that that basically really turns people off. What would you say with someone who agrees with Christian values but don't have the faith? And you know what? I put myself in that camp. Buck, what would you say to that?
That's a tough one because I respect that. And it's nice if you do have, I mean, the Christian values. See, a lot of people, I mean, that's a better situation than having quote unquote the faith and not the values. But I don't want to sound preachy. So I would say keep living as you are. And if you wonder where those values might come from or why they are values, peek into Orthodoxy at some point and see what you think. Because if you're turned off or the quote unquote faith seems silly, and I'm not trying to put words in anyone's mouth, or sure, far-fetched or quote, I mean, literally hard to believe, I don't blame you at all for having any of those feelings. And I had them for most of my adult life. And then I'm not trying to sound born again because that's a Protestant term, but it's, and so I'm not in that sense, but it's like at some point I saw what happened over 2020 and it's like, okay, so there is evil. Where's evil come from? There must be good. So where does good come from? Does good equal truth? Truth is good. And so I just started going down that rabbit hole.
Hmm. I think that's a big question is why those values are there. And I was talking to somebody when it came to that whole H-1B conversation. I'm like, you know, it really kind of seems to be that like your average European Christian white guy is essentially what built civilization over the last like 200-300 years. And I know that's going to make some people skin crawl. That's going to make them cry racist or whatever, but
that's just a fact. Yep. That's always, I mean, not to sound like Ben Shapiro, who I despise on many levels, but in a way facts aren't really a feeling thing that it's just, you know, like you mentioned that you watched that episode I did that dropped yesterday.
Yeah.
All we're talking about is the correct theology of Israel and Christianity and Judaism. Mm-hmm. We're just laying it out there. I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. Like, it shouldn't be controversial. For some reason, it is. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But, what you just said shouldn't be controversial. You're just stating a fact.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of controversial things. And that topic in particular, when it comes to Israel, is a very, very controversial thing. Did you get any big hits on that? Like, as in like people upset or questions?
Yeah. I mean, in the comments, I knew I would. You know, nothing productive. Right. One guy said, this is all a joke. I knew when I heard the opening music to his podcast it would suck. I don't know, something like, it's like, okay. Cool. But did you listen? So yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
sometimes your presuppositions all of us are super strong. And it's not necessarily that a fact is going to penetrate a wall of presuppositions unless you're kind of ready for it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. And to close out, my guest next week,
for a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
For those listening, you still there?
How long did you lose it for? About 30 seconds.
Okay.
They got him.
Yeah, they got him.
I was like, I wonder if they could hear me if I started talking. But go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah. Next week's guest is Orrin McIntyre. And I was a little bit. Yeah. Okay. So I must have cut out there. Yeah. Yeah.
Big fish.
Yeah. So I never disliked him, but I would throw shit his way because sometimes I'm like, oh, well, he doesn't apply his logic symmetrically or something like that. And, he replied to somebody tweeting underneath me and said, that being said, Kyle's band is pretty good. And I'm like, all right, maybe I should be a little bit more open to this guy. So, he followed me and then I messaged him. And then literally this morning, somebody messaged me in one of like the heavy metal group chats I'm in. And, they tagged me and surely enough, you know, GM or, Orrin put out his GM tweet. And what was the song? It was the song my band literally released a year ago. Was crying. I'm like, dude.
Okay.
That man knows the way to my heart.
That's pretty rad. Yes, he does. That's good, man.
But, basically to your point, it's just like, when it comes to presuppositions, sometimes you should probably just shut the fuck up and try to understand what somebody's saying and tangle with that rather than try to come at them with your worldview and engage with them there.
Yes. I need to take that advice much more. I think we all need to take that advice much more often.
100% guilty, 1000% guilty here. And, you know, I think all of us probably say like, we can recognize that flaw in ourselves and could definitely do better, but I know I'm probably worse than a lot of other people. So, you know, much to your point, iron sharpens iron. I gotta, yes, you know, do some reflection. But anyways, Buck, I really enjoyed this conversation today, man. Why don't you let the good people know where they could find you, support you, and all that good stuff?
Counterflow Podcast on the YouTube. Just search that on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel if you'd like to get wind of when we're dropping, notified when we're dropping every Tuesday. Typically, sometimes I'll switch it around, but it's generally every Tuesday evening. Let's see. Follow me on Twitter at Buck Rebel, BuckReBel. And I guess that's about all I got there.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your time so much, man. It's always good to talk to you. And if you don't got anything else, we'll call her there.
Thanks, Kyle. It's been good talking with you too.
Of course, man.